This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast, What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Welcome to the Hotel Hell. Check-in time is now, check-out time is never.
It's Mike Shope.
Does my room have cable?
No. And the sheets are made of fire.
Can I change rooms?
Sorry, we're all booked up. Hell convention in town.
And the Bulldog.
Can I have a late checkout?
I'll have to talk to the manager.
You're not the manager, even in your own fantasy?
I'm the owner. The co-owner. With Satan.
It's Mike Shope.
Okay. Just so I understand it, in your wildest fantasy, you are in hell. And you are co-running a bed and breakfast with the devil.
And the Bulldog.
Yeah, but I haven't told you my salary yet.
Go.
$80,000. Dollars a year
on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Draft fever?
Not yet.
No.
You love the draft.
I do. I love the draft.
If you forgot.
No, I don't. I don't feel. No. Maybe draft tickle in my throat.
Oh yeah, sure. You know it's coming.
It's a little scratchy.
You're worried.
Fever. A fever could be coming.
You're going to try to drink it away, but
I'm anticipating a fever.
You're pretty sure you're going to be sick in a couple of days. Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure I have draft fever. I've had a tough time with this draft because it's defense and it's pick 30. Like, there's no trade speculation worth caring about. You know, it's just sort of like you kind of wait. It'll be after 11 o'clock next
Thursday
night. Yeah,
I saw the last 3 years the pick. Two of the 3 years, it was at 11:38, and the other time it was like 11:29 or something. So it's gonna be late.
I agreed without even thinking about the time today to do a podcast for when the Bills are up. Oh wait a minute, I'm never up at that hour anymore.
Yeah, that would be.
I agree. I said yes.
That would be a quick hard no for me, dog.
I'll let you know on socials.
Nope.
Where you can find me next Thursday night at 11.
I'm not going to be doing that.
It won't be at the Morning Guys party. I'm jealous of the party. Like, I wish we'd had the party. Or I can't go to their party, though.
Why is that?
It's theirs.
But yeah, but you could.
I'm not on the marquee. I'm not going to that. I can't go to their party.
It would be cool to support them.
I want to support. I do like the idea of supporting them. I want to do it in a different way then.
Okay.
Because it sounds great.
Yeah, no, it definitely.
They said
definitely.
Last year was great. The Bills didn't even pick.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it's a fun time. I know that I'm not going to want to be out somewhere waiting until 11:45 for the Bills to pick a 340-pound lineman.
Where people are asking you, hey, are you Sneaky Joe? I heard you were going to be at this.
So, yeah.
Plus, you could also sort of steal their thunder if you're at that. It's their thing. You show up. Now it's yours.
I don't know. Do I... Do I come off like someone would walk in and try to like own the room or something?
No.
I mean, no, you know.
No, I wouldn't say it would be intentional.
No, I don't think that would happen.
I would think it would happen, but I don't think it would be intentional.
No. I mean, that's flattering.
You're taller than everybody else.
Well, that's right.
You walk in, they're going to gravitate to you. You're the tall one.
Big flat-brimmed hats on them, even bigger.
You've got the good name, the good face, the height. They're going to people gravitate to you.
Good face. The big, dumb red face.
Yes. I was about to say it that way, but you already did. It's easier. I'm off the hook.
Big, dumb red face.
I was going to describe it as a big, dumb red face.
Hashtag big, dumb red face.
Yeah, no. I have, I think, kind of a good thought about the draft, though.
Okay.
And I'm glad I didn't think of this yesterday, because I would have said it, and it would have sort of, like, kind of coming on the top, off the top rope of what we were already saying. So here's what I mean. We're trying to predict the Bills' first pick, right? We're trying to predict their strategy. And one school of thought, all right, mine, is they can't pick a wide receiver with the first pick. Why? Is it because they don't need one? Not exactly. It's because they've just done it. 2 years in a row, if you include Kincaid, mm-hmm. which you should. So 2 years in a row, their first pick was a pass catcher. So they would never do that again because they have those two guys. Those two guys are not, you know, about to be suspended as far as we know, or, you know, mm-hmm. they're alive. Kincaid and Coleman. So one thing we talked about for a few minutes yesterday was, well, what would it look like if they did it? And wouldn't that be a reason why they wouldn't?
Right, yeah, because Nate mentioned to me on Friday when I brought this up. He said, like, who's getting pushed down if you do that? Like, Coleman's getting pushed down, probably. He's, you know, it doesn't have to be that way, but probably that's who, you know, loses some runway, some playing time, especially if you draft someone that early. Like, if you draft someone 30, or even, I want to say, on Friday with either of those two second-round picks, I think that becomes maybe challenging. And the optics of that would, I think, and let's say that people would knee-jerk to it and be wrong, necessarily, that the Bills are down on either or both of the guys you just mentioned, Kincaid from 23 and Coleman from 24. Otherwise, why are you prioritizing this? So, yeah, I also think that that is a – and I think I said it this way yesterday when I brought it up, how I never liked a pushback. I didn't really have one. You know, like, I'm over here going, don't forget about Cooper and Holland's leaving. They need a guy. But – you put it the way Nate put it to me on Friday, and like you're saying now, I think it could keep the Bills from doing it, and maybe not even for the best reasons.
I think the way you describe it, he and I are saying different things. Oh. You're talking about, he might be talking about who sits, right? Who does this person come in over?
And displace, sure.
And, you know, then it's a question of, well, your asset allocation and how well have you thought this through? You're signing Palmer, you've signed Samuel, you drafted Coleman, you drafted Kincaid, etc. Have you really thought this through? That's one aspect of it. Another is just, if it's different, I think it's a little bit different, is just more sort of how you look. It's the second part of that point is kind of the same point. How you look is under question. Or in question, because it looks kind of scattershot. And it's how they're different to me, if I didn't make this clear, I don't think I did, is you're not so much figuring out who's out in the equation as you are like, all right, well, what does this kind of look like overall? It looks pretty random. You signed four or five guys last year besides drafting Coleman that, you know, you're just hoping that somebody makes a big impact for you. The closest you got from any of those guys was Hollins, who scored 5 touchdowns. Like, that was that led the team.
And played all the time.
And played all the time. Like, that was a success, but it really was throwing darts. I mean, Claypool mm-hmm. and MVS and all the other guys that came and went, they really were throwing darts. And that doesn't – I feel like this is subjective in terms of how it looks on the general manager. It can look like – you're desperate, but it could also look like you're trying, you're active, and that's what you want. So it's kind of both. Depending on your attitude about it, it's kind of both. If the Bills drafted a receiver at 30, I think most people would, you know, not Bills fans necessarily. Most fans are going to like whatever they do. But most other people are going to be like, what's going on? Like, you just kind of did this. Mm-hmm. And here would be the answer, though. They don't have it.
Right.
And that's really back to you want to give Bean credit for all those signings, for hoping that MVS works out or that Claypool mm-hmm. works out or that, you know, Coleman in his way works out. That's a bigger investment.
Yeah, you have to be a lot less worried about what it looks like and more concerned with what you have and, like, what you need to get done. What do you need? And I do still think there is a need, unless... you know, they're not as worried as they sounded about Coleman, or to a lesser extent Kincaid, because they both were sort of criticized, or at least, if not pointedly criticized, you know, sort of sternly told, you need to do more. You know, I need you to get bigger and stronger. We need more. You need to push through your injuries. You know, this is pro football. We're counting on you. And I think I mentioned this yesterday. That increases to me the need that I feel they have, because it's a way of telling the world we don't have it yet. Like, we're not all set there. Like, I'm telling, I need this guy to do this and this and this and take this step, and this other guy to do this and this and take this step. And, you know, sure, if you draft someone, there's no way you can be sure that they're going to step in ahead of either of those guys. It's very unlikely. They already have a year of experience under their belt in the system and all the stuff, but still, you still sound to me like a team that needs a guy. If you look at their depth chart, I don't think you'd arrive at they need a guy. Like, the depth chart and the draft statuses. You know, like, oh, I got a receiver I drafted at 34 last year, or 33, excuse me. Mm-hmm. I've got this Kincaid. I've got Curtis Samuel. I signed Josh Palmer. I've got Khalil Shakir. I just re-signed him. Like, what's my problem? I've got four guys going out for passes on this play. There they are. And then the rest.
It's okay.
It's okay, right. It's not. It is not all set. So I don't want to dismiss. I mean, I recognize that the betting favorite would be defense with that pick, and maybe even defense with all three of those picks Thursday, Friday. But I think if it falls the right way, and Bean can kind of get over everything we're talking about here, and a guy they really love. Like, they love Matthew Golden, and for some reason he fought, and he's exactly what they need. It's a nice compliment to Coleman, and someone that they feel can potentially become maybe even a number one for them or something. Then I think the need is strong enough that it wouldn't be just, no, we can't do that, or we shouldn't do that because we need a corner or we need a big honking defensive tackle.
They do need other things, and I'm not blind to that. I want to talk about, because we throw this kind of stuff around and already again today, like how Bean might be thinking in terms of himself. Not so much like just in a selfish way, but, you know, what's the most important thing is to keep the job. And you don't want to, he's kind of like down a little bit right now with the draft, with Elam and then Kincaid and then Coleman. So if it were me, I'd be like sort of keen to that. I'd want to play it a little bit safer. I'd want to make sure I filled a hole. And then everybody in that press conference is going to talk about how smart it was. Because, well, obviously they needed this corner. I mean, I could have every defensive tackle in this draft, though, and still give up 30 to Kansas City. I think of the Giants. And what does everybody say about the Giants? Like, you've got coach and GM who need to keep the jobs that they have. And ownership shouldn't really care. Owner doesn't need Brian Daboll, right? He's still going to own the team. And as I say all the time, because I think it's really a key thing that gets like sort of lost in most sports talk, is like the owner is the one in theory, with your sensibilities. He's the one that cares about like the long term. The coach and the GM are temps. Even McDermott and Bean, they'll be gone. Someday they'll be gone. Mm-hmm. So what matters is like what's for the best for the Bills over the years and for the Giants. And so the Giants are in this spot where they have Russell Wilson, and they have Jameis Winston. And what does Brian Daboll really need from that to stay on? Maybe he needs a winning record or something like that. Like, well, do I want Shedeur Sanders? Then do I, if I pick him at three, do I play him? Like, I think I do. And I think I'm out of here if I do that.
Right.
So who should decide?
Right. You might, yeah, if, in their case, real quick, like, I could see Daboll and Shane, if they're thinking about their futures as much or more than the what's best for the team overall, then, yeah, let me get Travis Hunter on the field with Russell Wilson, and maybe we win 9 games or 10 games and I survive.
Right. Neighbors. I mean, yep. You might have something. So it's really just simply the coach who's on the hot seat and the rookie quarterback. How often does that work out? You know, like usually that's Darnold with Todd Bowles, right? That's usually, or Adam Gase or whoever. Like that usually doesn't work out. So should the team then not pick the player because the coach is in trouble? No, it shouldn't work like that. I think all the stuff about, it's all speculation. None of this is like from Brandon Bean. It's all just us talking about what seems logical. None of that stuff about what they've done before should mean anything.
That's absolutely right. That should be right every year.
That should be right all the time. Everything they've done in the past should be irrelevant. You know, you have your roster. That's relevant. But not who you picked and when and how much money, mostly, like the money. Like, it's really just the point about they've drafted Kincaid and Coleman shouldn't matter when analyzing what they need. They need corner, too. I'm not saying they don't. But it shouldn't matter. So now we're talking. Like, not, if we could live in a world where that wasn't a real thing, it really becomes pretty exciting. Like, the reason I can't get to you and maybe everybody, all, not everybody, but many people, the reason you can't get to wide receiver at pick 30 is because of Coleman. They just did it. And they lost Elam. That didn't work out. Run stuffing. Like, that's it. Like, they just did it. If you take that out of the equation, it's closer. What receiver looks like.
Yeah.
I think you have, there's no exact consensus on this. I mean, there would be an average, but like on ADP chasing today, we looked at different mock drafts. The first one we looked at was Todd McShay in the first round, not including Hunter. He's got two receivers. Others have four or more, right? Two. I think the guy that is the most exciting, if you could get to a point where you're not hamstrung by what you've done in the past, is Luther Burden. That guy is shooting the moon. And it could bomb. Like, he is like sort of high ceiling, low floor, right? Burden. That could bomb. But that is some, if you really, we're trying to win. Like, you're trying to win big. Mm-hmm. And in this scenario, we don't care who we picked before. If we relegate Keon Coleman to a lesser role, then we do. Not exactly perfect,
mm-hmm.
but then we do. Because we want our best players on the field. I think Golden, A, is probably picked already. Because almost every mock draft has him going like before pick 20. And B has the wrong profile. He's the kind of guy you don't draft. He had the burner time at the combine. He hasn't really been that productive in college. He's not big. You know, he's sort of like the example of the guy that's kind of fool's gold in the draft. Doesn't always happen that way. I mean, Worthy might be good. He definitely came on.
Yeah.
But I think Burden is like football guys, wide receiver 2, Sam Monson, wide receiver 3, Palazzolo, wide receiver 3, ahead of Ibuka. Sam and Steve have Golden as their wide receiver 7 and 8. They've got Royals and Higgins and Jalen Noel, these other guys in there. Interestingly, Sam has Ibuka has his wide receiver 11, which is really unusual.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know. All this is just kind of for fun because ultimately I come back to they're not going to really do it. They didn't do it when they needed it.
Right. 2 years ago they needed it. Last year, I mean, they did it, but they punted it.
He was wide receiver eight.
As far as they could. I mean, they did.
That's right. Pretty much.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that about Golden. He reads to me, the more I read about him, the more I don't know if this is a good comp or not, and this is not my area, but I feel like I'm reading about Zay Flowers when I read about Matthew Golden.
Oh.
And, you know, look, whatever. I'm not studying in, like, the guys you just mentioned, but that idea to me still – I like that, but I don't think it's probably not realistic. We talked about Burton yesterday, right? Like, isn't that the guy that the Tyler had the dude on his podcast talking about? Like, there's maybe
the mom problem.
There's a mom problem or something. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I don't know. The Bills might need to or could maybe use to get off of the high horse about some of that sort of stuff. I'm not saying go draft guys that, you know, have hit people, especially their significant others or anything like that. But
allegedly, yes.
But you've got a guy. If you've got a guy that has had some issues, trust your room, trust your team. You know, like maybe you can sort of bring him in and make that work. I recognize the stakes, and it's easy for me to say from way out here, because if that happens and the guy, you know, sleeps through meetings or something and isn't on time and all kinds of stuff, then you got a problem on your hands.
Yep.
And that's a big asset. And in a year where you just did it two times in a row, maybe that's too much risk to bite off. If there's a safer guy there, then maybe I could see them doing it despite all of this. I just have never wanted to dismiss the idea entirely. I don't think it's, you know, it's not even like a coin flip. I think it's pretty heavily favored defense, and maybe even a third pick on defense. A lot of the guys, they've met with, you know, borderline first round and second round type prospects, but they are also, it's like every day, there's guys coming in that I have to Google them specifically. They don't even show up on my rundown of guys. You know what I mean? Like, I've got the CBS, they've got only so many guys listed at CBS where I generally use here, because it's easy for me to navigate and get where I want to go. And some of these names, just like, oh, I don't even, that guy doesn't show up here. He's not one of the top, you know, 20 wide receivers, according to CBS Sports.
Who was Trapasso's Elijah Badger?
Yeah, right.
Florida guy?
He's not on those lists. And there's another guy that they had visiting today that's got returnability that's not on that list. A guy from Ole Miss, I think I'm thinking of. Not Trey Harris.
No.
Another guy.
All right. DK Metcalf.
Caught 9 touchdowns last year. And so that sort of leans into, they're just going to pick a guy. They're going to try to find Khalil Shakir again. They're going to try to pick a guy on Saturday that hopefully can play for them and not use their premium assets on it. So who knows? I mean, but they have interviewed enough guys that are going to go in the top 60, say, that, you know, so it's not, to me, I'm not dismissing it entirely, but they're doing a lot of work, it seems, on the guys that are going to be picked late.
Jordan Watkins?
Yeah, that's a guy.
Not Antoine Wells Jr., also from Ole Miss? Okay.
Watkins is the guy. I saw
Jordan Watkins.
Yeah.
Burden, before we break, and we'll look for your calls next, Burden at Football Guys and the Rookie Draft Guide. Here, does this move you? Burden will perform in any system that needs an injection of talent. Do the Bills not need an injection of talent, no matter what they've spent on other players? Do they not need an injection of talent at wide receiver? The reason I think I could say they don't is because, well, Allen exists, so who cares? Who cares who else is on the field? And I don't know. You can't just settle for that. 803-0550 for your calls next. Luke Fox, Sportsnet, with the Sabres hosting the Leafs tonight. We'll talk about the Sabre season and the playoffs. And also, Kevin Adams will join us at 5, pregame at 6 for tonight's game downtown. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, 803-0550. This is WGR.
I think that this is a good draft for the Bills' needs, mainly because there's not a guy in this class, or there are very few guys in this class, who really project to be that classic X receiver who's really fast and really big. But at the same time, you have a lot of guys who do a great job working longer horizontal breaking routes, who can then use their speed and be able to get yards after the catch, or guys who can do a little bit of everything. And certainly with the Bills, it seems like that's the profile they're looking for a lot of these talents.
Matt Waldman, recent visit to our morning show. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. The draft is a week from Thursday. Why do I keep have to tighten this?
I don't know. Mine never needs to be fiddled with.
I think I'm doing it like multiple times a day now. And what is changing that makes me need to tighten this like again in another 20 minutes? I don't know. I'm not doing anything else.
It's becoming habitual. I don't even know. It's like a tick now.
No, it might be, but it is loose when I do it.
Oh, okay.
So it's needed.
All right. I'm going to keep an eye on you and see how often you move it around.
All right.
Because maybe that's what, because I don't know. I don't feel like I jostle mine very much once we start. Put a force field around it.
Everyone, keep me honest here. Luther Burden on tax day, April 15th, is the closest I've come to, like, this is the player I want. I think the odds of it happening are very small, or maybe long is better. But unlike other receivers that get talked about as first-round picks, namely Tet McMillan and Matthew Golden, this guy's on the board, maybe. Like, he's got a much better chance of being available to the Bills. Would they draft a receiver? It would be, you know, take some nerve to do it. But isn't that, like, irrelevant? As we talked about earlier, shouldn't it just be about what do you need relative to the strengths and weaknesses of the draft class? Depending on where you think the cutoff is at receiver. I think there have been four that have been in the first round much of the time, if not most of the time here this offseason, and everything else feels forced to me. Jaden Higgins, Jalen Royals, Trey Harris, these guys that are sort of like nothing against them or the analysts I'm speaking of, but seem like just sort of a little bit niche, like just, by the way, there's a guy at Utah State. You know, this guy at Missouri was an absolute elite prospect, immediate difference maker in college. His team wasn't good. They say like he didn't really evolve as a player, but in terms of tools, he's got it. And then your organization and coaches do the rest. So, I don't know. Maybe he's even possible at 56 if people are down on him for whatever off-field reasons they might have. I'm kind of excited about him. And I'm enjoying it because I haven't really been excited about anybody. There's another new corner on one of the PFF mocks today. The guy we talked about for a day.
The East Carolina guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's his story again?
He hurt? Torn ACL in like early in the season.
Okay.
But I like that idea plenty. I mean his athletic, he's 6'2", long arms, he's long, Mike. I think that works. It, you know, if you trust that, you know, he's healthy, and I would assume that, you know, they're doing their work on that. So like of the corner ideas, I like that. And it seems like the Bills, and I don't know, maybe all the teams in the league are doing this, but they have met with, and I don't have a list, I should be keeping a database, but they've met with 3, 4, 5 guys who had injuries. There's a Notre Dame corner, Morrison, who they, I think, had in for a 30 visit or met, they've been tied to him. And that's another guy that was really good, but had an injury and wasn't, you know, just so he's being pushed down where, you know, so where the Bills are picking, it feels to me like maybe if either of those guys were healthy, they wouldn't see 30 or 56 even, maybe. But because they were dinged, maybe, and you know, you can get them at a value, and if you hit that and they stay healthy, then you know you've done a really good job. So I'm all right with that idea too. Not that I want them to exclusively, be, you know, drafting guys who are coming off torn ACLs, but I think you can do well there if you're not scared of that.
Yeah, feels like sort of like it's Halloween. These corners and defensive linemen, and you go to a house and you get whatever, some sort of hard candy, It counts. It's in the bag. It helps fill the bag up. Right. You're not really excited about it at all. Whereas, I'm trying to think of the right, you know, food example for a guy like this, where it could be amazing, but right. You don't know. You get a giant Reese cup or Three Musketeers or something, you know it's going to be good. Like, you can't know here in this,
mm-hmm.
you know, absolutely jammed down your throat example, this metaphor. But something where, like, it could be amazing, maybe it's rotten.
You definitely don't want that.
What is Bean's footing with the Bills, as you see it, with the fans, like, overall? Is he fine? Is this draft maybe really important for him? I don't know. I mean, the Sabres don't make changes. So I can't even think seriously about the Bills making changes.
Riding five straight division titles.
Right.
I do feel like he's, this offseason, I've had to remind people that I believe it's McDermott's show entirely, even though, you know, the traditional hierarchy and the structure puts, you know, the GM above coach. But I don't think that this exactly works that way. And I think there are a lot of examples in the NFL of that. You know, it's more and more common, I think, that the coach is sort of like he's the CEO and everyone else just sort of fills in around him. But I've heard more direct, pointed criticism of Bean, because of Kincaid not smashing and having a tough second year, and Coleman, and, you know, anything else you want here. Elam really is a big one. You know, talk about things you should be scared of doing because what? How it's going to look? I mean, drafting a corner in 2025 after trading away Elam for spare parts is not going to look good. I mean, you're doing that because you missed on him. And so that has created the need. And so, you know, the idea of not picking someone because of how it looks, you know, recognizing that it's not three in a row like it would be at receiver, like we're talking last segment with Kincaid and then Coleman and now a third guy if they were to go that route. But if Bean is worried about how he looks, drafting a corner at 30 is going to shine a light on the miss on Elam from 4 years ago, I think.
Well, I know how you can avoid that.
Don't do it.
Draft Luther Burden.
Right. But your question is, you know, what's his footing like? Like, how? I think he's taking more shots than normal, but I don't think anyone at all over there is in any trouble ever with anything. They got Allen right. And, you know, the critics of both guys will want to tell you that that was just luck and that the misses aren't luck. You know, it's good luck that you drafted Allen, but it's not bad luck. You're just terrible at your job because you drafted Kyer Elam, which really doesn't jive with me. That should work both ways. There is luck on both sides, and it just didn't go your way. In the case of Elam, he was perfectly finely thought of as a prospect to be drafted where the Bills drafted him, I think. It just didn't work. And I don't know where the blame lies entirely in that, but they, you know, they missed. I just don't ever really like dinging them for hits. If you're going to ding them for misses, you should credit them for hits, or you should just do none of it. But you know, where does that leave you?
I don't know where it leaves us, because then we're just talking hockey all the time.
Right.
I think that's fair. I think the best. It wasn't like it was in question at the time, but the best thing about drafting Allen, maybe, is that you were willing to draft a quarterback there. Like, that was the plan. And a lot of those Bills years came and went where they just wouldn't. They didn't have a good quarterback, and they still wouldn't pick one because they had to have that run stuffer. They had to have that linebacker. You know, they had to have whatever it was, that corner. And you were just almost definitely going nowhere. So many teams still like this. The Steelers. The Steelers make the playoffs every year, and they're insufferable, and they're doomed. Like, what is that existence? You know, and the Bills were below that. They couldn't make the playoffs at all, and they were doomed. So, yeah, I mean, Allen, of course, hit, to say the very, very least, but the starting point is they were willing to do it. And that was different from even the year before where they could have done
it. Right, even willing to do it, and they maneuvered themselves quite aggressively to make it happen. Like, they planned for it. Like, Sale said it the day after the 17 draft when they didn't take Mahomes, and they made the trade to move down and let the Chiefs take Mahomes, and they got Tre'Davious White. Sale said, you know, they got paid for that, and they're going to use these assets to go get their guy next year. And that's exactly what they ended up doing. I mean, they moved up twice to make that happen. And so, you know, they executed a plan, and it, you know, they picked the right guy, and it worked.
Cordy Glenn does not get enough credit for all of this.
Right, started the whole thing off.
He should be leading the charge next year for sure, that guy. Without
that,
him.
That got them 21. I think that got them to 21, and from there they moved up, I think.
Isn't seven.
Is that right? I think that's right.
I want to say they started at 21 because they were wild card, and they moved up from there.
All right,
and then to seven,
maybe to 12. I've got 12 maybe. In my head for some reason too.
Maybe.
All right.
I feel like 21 would be about
nine and seven.
First, last team in the playoffs, be 21. Here's David with us. Hi, David.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Not much. Just hanging out doing a radio show. How
just
are you?
Work.
Very nice. I just wanted to comment on the Bean stuff. I mean, I think the Bean criticism this offseason and last offseason feels kind of unwarranted. You flip Benford and Elam, we're all saying that's a home run of a draft. You took a lot of other great players that draft. Kincaid and Coleman, both guys who are fighting through injuries. I think Bean's been very sharp. I think his draft class has been really good. I'll hang up and listen, but I have full confidence in that guy.
All right.
I don't like flip Benford and Elam. Like, I mean, they did their work, and they, you know, they had a I don't know what grade they had on Benford, but I'm sure it wasn't a first round grade. they picked them in the sixth round, so, you know, good. You did your homework and you hit on a guy late, and that's to your credit. But that doesn't absolve you of missing. You missed on the other pick. That's it. It's a miss. Benford hitting doesn't wash that away. Like, good players getting drafted, in, like Matt Milano, who predates Bean. That was McDermott and Whaley, for what it's worth, right? The first year, that same 17 draft we were just talking about. It's the same thing. Like, it makes up for it. It gives you a great player that was worthy of an extension that you can count on, but it doesn't wash away the miss. The miss is still a miss.
I guess. I mean, I think I agree. Interesting to think that, like, so Elam is kind of an F, right?
Like, yeah,
They wouldn't put him on the field. They didn't trust him. Then they needed him right down to the playoff loss, and he just couldn't get the job done. And Benford's an A. If Elam is a C, does Benford ever play? Like, does he ever sort of get the chance to show what he's capable of? You know, I think you'd like to think that he would, that he's showing in practice, or maybe there's an injury, right? Like, just sort of he would eventually be found. But I don't know. I mean, that's a different deal. The pressure that teams feel to play their draft picks, because listen to us every day.
Yeah.
This is like your draft picks define you as a GM almost more than your record does. This is what you're expected to be good at, finding the good players and bringing them on and making it work. And if Elam is average, does Benford even ever get a chance to do anything? I don't know. But he was bad. And so they needed – I mean, it's not exactly linear. I mean, there were other players involved, and it's maybe likely that Benford is Benford. But it's not a sure thing. It's different if – Your first-round pick is good enough to stay on the field, but not great.
It can happen that a guy would be blocked that way. You'd like to think that over the course of time here, maybe it doesn't happen that first season as quickly as it does, but by the second season, you know, we got to find a way to get this guy on the field. You know, maybe they divest themselves of Tre'Davious White sooner or something, like whatever. But it's not a given, because I'm sure that's how guys – you know, get somewhere else on a second team and a fresh start, and it works.
Right. 803-0550, hockey at 4 with Luke Fox from Sportsnet. Sabres and Leafs downtown tonight. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog, WGR. Welcome back. We'll chat with Luke Fox of Sportsnet coming up in about 10 minutes. The Canadiens last night lose in a shootout to Chicago. So that is still
Columbus, grabs. Columbus is alive. Yes, they need to win tonight. Montreal is idle. I meant to look earlier. I'm not sure who they finish up with and when that is, but Columbus has two left. Montreal's only got the one. So Columbus needs to win out and have Montreal get no
points. Losing regulation.
Yes, right. Pretty great debut for that kid, Demidov, last night. Holy cow. Did you see any of the highlights of that?
No, but I did enjoy Cliff Coral for the 78 Blackhawks in the game I watched at the Forum.
Yeah, that's helpful. Make sure you bring that up when we talk to our next guest. Man, just a beautiful assist to set up, like, I think his second shift in the NHL. Just a beautiful, like, if this were Eichel making his debut, we would have been losing our minds. It was just a spectacular setup for a pretty easy goal for Newhook, and then he scored on maybe the shift or the two shifts after that, whatever. He scored an assist and a goal early. It was looking like a legendary debut, a game that they need to win to make the playoffs, and it got away from them, obviously, and they didn't get it, as it turned out. But still was a great night for him. That debut was really impressive.
Bulldog, you besmirched the 78-9 Canadians. You're above that. This team won four cups in a row. This was the fourth of four straight cups.
What were there, like four teams in the league?
It was at least double digits. This game against Chicago, they're up 3-1 mid-second. They lose 8-3 at home.
Try to work in a save.
Work in a save, Bunny LaRocque. Eight goals on 31. I didn't really watch this game, but Darcy Rota had a hat trick.
Yep, sure. I am I'm excited for the Canadian teams to be in the playoffs.
I know. Montreal, I have years of damage from watching the Sabres lose to Montreal in the 80s and 90s, and I'll never reconcile that. It's 24 Stanley Cups to my zero. Like, it's always going to be up here, down here. But you ask me Montreal or Columbus in the playoffs?
Come on. Right. Not even close.
It's not even a question.
Yeah.
Poor Columbus. I mean, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
Not their fault.
Right. And they were a great story in the league with the year they had, at least to start after the tragedy in the summer with the Gaudreau brothers. But yeah. They're not an easy team to necessarily root against. I guess I want to say because of that, it's kind of, you know, pulls at the heartstrings. But Montreal, that scene there last, even like yesterday, you know, regular season game, but this kid's debut, it was bonkers. It was such a good watch. I was bummed out though. It was I don't want to be too hard on myself. Amazon Prime has been doing a Monday night game in Canada all year long, and this was that game. So I did not get the TSN got people. I got instead. I can't even think of the
Amazon. You got Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit
was doing the play-by-play, but it was Jody Shelley was the analyst, and I don't know who the play-by-play person
Andrew
was.
Whitworth.
But it wasn't right. It wasn't what I was looking for. But still,
sadly,
that's where I spent my time last night.
I didn't really watch that game from 1978.
You just got the box open. You're just playing.
I watched
playing the bit.
Watched a minute of it in here yesterday, and it was still up as one of my tabs. But I didn't. The first shift, Rajon Uhl was hitting people. I can tell you something that I saw from this game, right. And then I can tell you the stats. That's it. 78-9 Blackhawks Canadians. Luke Fox of Sportsnet might be in Buffalo for the game tonight.
He definitely is. Yes.
Sabres Leafs. We will discuss the Sabres season and the NHL postseason coming up next. Kevin Adams joins us at 5 today, pregame at 6 for Toronto-Buffalo. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.